What happens to a team's sales force when the games stop and there's no way of knowing when they'll start again? Do you keep dialing and emailing and texting? And what do you say when someone picks up the phone? There are aspects of those questions that may seem familiar to those who lived and worked through the shock and ensuing uncertainty of 9/11, or whether to strike or lockout that wiped out parts or even the entirety of a season. And there are others that are entirely new for everyone. We'll explore the impact of a global pandemic on the economic lifeblood of a sports organization and the leadership questions associated with that on this episode of SBJ Unpacks. I'm Bill King, joined now by Bernie Mullen, founder of the Aspire Group, a firm that provides outsourced sales and also consulting to pro teams and college programs. Bernie, you work with so many properties across so many levels of sports. When you think about the impact of this on someone's sales, both season tickets and sponsorships, I would suspect where they are on their calendar has a lot to do with what they're dealing with right now. When you think about where teams and college programs are today at the end of March, who's facing what? And who do you suspect is feeling the tightest pinch because of the timing?
Well, it's a great question, Bill, without a shadow of a doubt. The NFL is in great shape. Season complete, in the bag, all the business side stuff in terms of combines and prepping for the draft. It's not easily done remotely, but it sure as hell can be done. And to what extent they have to put people in a room, they can put them in a room with the social distancing that they need to do. I think all the other sports, particularly basketball, is under a clock. Baseball, I had 10 years in Major League Baseball between the work I did with the Pirates and the Rockies. Mm-hmm. And the Dodgers, they can adjust. I used to be on the scheduling committee when I was with the Pirates. They can adjust. It's not perfect, but they can adjust. I think basketball is probably facing the toughest scenario. Do you, cancel the regular season and go immediately into playoffs? Do you do early rounds with shorter number of games in the series? All of those kind of things. It's really hard to know. It's definitely in the pro side, it's a club-by-club scenario in terms of the sponsorship side with the contracts, certainly with the premium seating.
Right.
Many of those are under long-term contracts. Individual season ticket holders, group sales, single game ticket sales, we'll see what comes back. I've had some recent discussions with, an investment banker we've hired in the past for a variety of different reasons of investment for our growth. And, he's not a sports fan, and he thinks we're going to be seriously damaged by lots of fans not coming back into a public assembly scenario.
Right.
I keep telling him that he's proving that he's not a sports fan because he doesn't realize where we are. I think what all of us are doing is keeping the jokes going, and the male sports stereotype joke is the one that says day seven of without sports. So this is a couple of weeks ago now. I discovered this very attractive, really nice woman on the couch. She claims to be my wife, little sexist, but I think it works for the women as well because of how distracted we are when we're sports fans. So please, hope I didn't offend any women in that.
I don't think you did.
Hopefully they all chuckle and go, damn right. So I think you look at it that way. On the college side, it's really hard to know. We are on the ground at 47 college partners right now on campus. And I would say, a third, we are BAU, business as usual. And certainly that includes most of the big Power Fives. And that third of them, all we're doing is outbound service calls. Hey, thanks for your support in the past. We're just calling to say, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And phenomenally appreciated as, because one of our phrases is we build fans for life. And that's how you build fans for life is when, tough times come around, you share your compassion, your concern, and your appreciation, as we try to do for our staff, we certainly doing for our fans, for our clients. And, then there's a third of some of these ADs, and I've really tried to to push them away from this. In fact, we just submitted an article on this in terms of donors. This is the perfect time to talk to every donor, not just the, you know, donors of $5,000 and above, you know, but every donor, have a conversation. How are you doing? How is everything with you? You know, there's a lot of businesses that are affected. You just don't know how people are affected, and building that relationship during this time is key. So it's a long ramble to say that for, you know, my investment banker, I've gone, you're wrong. The sports fans are, you know, chomping at the bit, and I think they're going to come back in droves when things happen. But how those things happen, you know, I mean, tough decisions in the Premier League. I'm an Everton fan, so I try and be objective and say, do you give Liverpool the championship if there's not another game played, because they clearly would have won it if we kept going? Or do you use the philosophy that says, no, they haven't fully clinched it, therefore they haven't earned it? And it's, you know, I can't be a hypocrite because I'm one of the guys saying this everybody gets a trophy generation is baloney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a trophy when you win. And you learn how horrible it tastes to lose and how much fun it is to come back and work hard to win the next time around. So I think there's a lot of things swirling in a lot of people's heads. And one of the last things I'll say in that first question, the answer, because it's such a vital question, is you go back in history and Kellogg's Corn Flakes and Kellogg's, all of their breakfast cereals were not number one in the world at the time of the Great Depression. They were number three largest cereal manufacturer in North America.
Uh-huh.
And they kept on marketing and selling through the Great Depression when every one of the other bigger cereal companies, Post, et cetera, you know, retreated back and didn't advertise and didn't market and didn't sell. And so there is an amazing opportunity that comes through these terribly tough times if you keep on engaging with your fans, but engaging in a different way. None of our kids are going out there pushing sales hard, whether it's premium tickets, season tickets, certainly not group tickets at this point in time, and certainly not standalone donations, but they are having the conversations with, how are you? How's your family? Where are you? What's going on? You know, we have every confidence we're going to be back. College football will go off in schedule, even if this, you know, shelter in place runs into June. We still think college football will go on schedule. And, you know, that's the beauty for most colleges, is most of the money, overwhelming amount of money, certainly in ticket sales, comes in college football, college basketball. And that, for the most part, those seasons were done, not the tournaments and not the big dance.
Right. But were they done in terms of those season ticket renewals, the football renewals, for example, which are so critical, you know, for any college athletic program, and are tied to the donation? Where would those typically be in that cycle, in those conversations at most schools?
Oh, and that's another great question. Overwhelmingly, Bill, most of them would have been far down the road. You know, when you go back to 2000, when I first went to the NBA and we built Teamboat, you know, which is acknowledged as the best practice unit for all of pretty much the sports and entertainment business, not just basketball and not just pros. And certainly when we started Aspire 12 years ago, we started, you know, teaching and educating the colleges on these Teamboat in sports business best practices. So renewal should really start during the season.
Right.
You should really get next year's rates out before the season's done. So if you look at that logically, college football should have been well underway for renewals in January, February, March. And most of the deadlines would have been completed by now. And some of our Power Five schools that have strength, and they may not be, let's say they have strength, they may not be that strong in the win-loss record on the field, but they have strong, strong brands,
right,
and strong following. They've gone ahead. You know, so if you look at, you know, we have what we call PAR reports,
right,
which is a performance analytics report we produce every week for our clients, and they get this, and it documents exactly how many calls we made, all of what we call root, which is, you know, call volume, call duration, number of referrals, number of appointments, da-da-da-da-da. Other than face-to-face appointments, which we're obviously not doing, we have all of those stats. And at these big Power Five schools, for the most part, and some of our mid-majors, the autonomous fives, are doing the same thing. It's business as usual, and that's the third I referred to before. They're well down the road. They're not changing their deadlines. They're not doing anything else. The middle third, you know, and that tends to be some of the brands that are less strong, certainly a lot of the mid-majors, maybe some of the emerging programs, they tended to have put a halt on their renewals or extended the deadlines. And so it's soft. So again, you know, if the fan segues on a call, so I call you and you segue to, hey, what should I do about renewals? You know, I simply say, Bill, it's entirely up to you. You know, we push the deadline back. If it's convenient, comfortable for you, you know, please go ahead and renew right away if that's you know, what you want to do and comfortable doing. And if you want to delay, certainly I'll give you another courtesy call close to that time. You know, when we have a better sense of where this pandemic is going, when we can start to think about returning to normal and that the seasons are going to go off as planned. And then the final third is no conversation at all, which is really scary and frightening. And many of them are the ones that, and some of them in that category are basketball-only schools, Bill, and therefore,
right.
You know, they don't feel the need to push at this point in time. You know, it's problematic for us as a company because it's very simple. We probably have half of the contracts that we have with colleges are success-based revenue-generating models. And therefore, we've got a workforce we have to keep on board and pay while we're not selling tickets and therefore not invoicing and therefore not getting any money. And that's where, you know, this government stimulus program, we're all waiting for the final details of it. That's where it's going to be essential mm-hmm. to small businesses like us. We employ just under 200 full-time people. And I think that's going to really, really help us. But, you know, and we're certainly working with that one third that is not communicating to say, gung, you've got to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time. This is the time to be Kellogg's.
So
this is the time to show them as people
mm-hmm.
and as families and not just as a season ticket holder number, blankety blank.
So dealing with those salespeople who are on the ground, or in this case, on the phone, and who now are probably, you know, spread out all over the place, and you're turning – you're really literally like you're flipping the script here, right? I mean, if you think about what their sales script was before, if you think about all they went through in training when they came in to work for Aspire, or all they were trained when any team that's out there, any property out there really that has a sales staff, they work off of generally scripts. They have some general ideas. They have an approach. All those things that you have ingrained in training, how do you then flip over to this with that staff? And especially when, you know, there's no boiler room here, right? I mean, I don't even know if boiler rooms exist anymore, but there's no boiler room here. This is people probably in a lot of cases making these calls from home.
Well, yeah, they are making the calls from home without a doubt. I think we're very fortunate in some respects that we're actually not flipping the script upside down, because, you know, what we learned at the MBA and what most really good programs do, and there certainly are exceptions, you know, and I think that without being completely self-serving, some of our competitors use a transactional approach. So I think in those cases, Bill, they have to flip it upside down. Ours has always been relationship-based. So if I can give you an example,
please.
And then this is us as a company, not just within the context of the Fan Relationship Management Center, is a name we created for a deliberate message. It's a very strong message. It's a relationship management center designed to create fans for life, so that our sales process is very much build the relationship and take time. There are other schools of thought that some of our competitors have adopted and some of the other people out there training have adopted, which is in the first 2 minutes, you make a decision as to whether the person's going to buy or not and get off. We don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We've never done that. We really, you know, if you take the step back, today's Fan Relationship Management Center business, which used to be telemarketing, that used to be inside sales and boiler rooms and everything else, you know, unsuccessful. And so what the MBA led and what we followed, and hopefully we like to think that we've enhanced it through next practices, not just best practices, is very much that I have no idea what Bill King is going to do 5-10 years from now and his relationship with his alma mater. And so for the most part, it's very sophisticated database driven. It is data enhanced. It is segmented, scored. I have sent a text or an email to you in advance of the offer that I'm going to be calling you on the phone about. And I've seen whether you've opened, clicked through, posted a shirt on it. So I've got a pretty good idea of how interested you are or not. Mm-hmm. So we're not spamming. We're not bombarding. We are calling what we call digitally pre-qualified leads, meaning we've used electronic social media, digital media to warm you up and to test whether or not our assumption of what it is you're looking for is in fact what we're about to offer, and that match is there. And so it's very different from what it's been in the past, certainly for our company. So they've been trained on these relationship calls over the period of time on that relationship call. Once you've demonstrated to me that you have that interest, I will then lead you to asking about that particular package, plan, offer, and make sure that it is a match and something of interest to you. So it's a very different approach that we've had for years. And in circumstances like this, it works particularly well for that reason, I think.
Should teams, schools, everyone anticipate now those people who will say, yeah, I know I renewed, but this has now happened, that has now happened, I'm worried about this next, I'm worried about that next. Should anyone really expect those calls to start coming in, and how do you deal with those?
The answer is yes. And I think in this preventative service call, this temperature check, this is how you're doing call, those things will come up. If you look online, the traffic online has got to be through the roof with mm-hmm. everybody stuck at home, just looking for things to do. If you look at those, are we going to arm bump? You know, are we going to put our hand on our heart more like the Indian namaste, you know, as opposed to shaking hands? Simple things like that. Are our daily habits going to be different? I mean, at Starbucks, never going to go back to you go to the community table to get the cream and the sugar and mm-hmm. the stir and the top for your drink, all those things, you know, and the warm sleeve for the cup. I've gone to my local Pandera a few times, and of course it's all behind the counter and, you know, brought to a table at the end for you to walk over to the table at the end so that they don't even have to reach over.
Right.
Are these the new normal practices? You know, hard to know. They're really hard to know. I think for some, yes. Bill, I think back to I was with the NBA when we had 9/11. I was in my office, on Fifth Avenue. Saw the damage from the first plane, which hit right before I arrived for work, and saw the second plane hit. Saw both towers fall, and had my executive assistant, who I'd hired 2 months earlier from Cantor Fitzgerald, on the phone with 3 of our closest friends who were trapped and died. And you say, you know, and then David Stern gave me the responsibility, because in charge of the team business, of all the meetings with the teams as to how we would start the league. We mm-hmm. had the advantage that we hadn't started. Obviously, 9/11 was before we started the exhibition games, beginning of October in those days. But we sat there and went backwards and forwards between, you know, first of all, what's the value? I mean, mm-hmm. I looked out my office window every day, and there was the police, you know, Irish bagpipe bands, and playing Amazing Grace every day, you mm-hmm. know, a hymn that I used to love that I almost became hating, because, you know, it meant there was funerals down right below me. The coffins were being taken in. The fire trucks had their huge snorkels in the air with 50-foot, American flags, mm-hmm. and they were burying dust because they didn't find the bodies of most of these people. In that context, we are having these meetings and these phone calls with the team saying, what do we do? And what we started to realize was sports is a really important part of American society. You know, is it essential? No. That's why we don't have any games right now. There's clearly, you know, grocery stores are essential. Pharmacies are essential. Gas stations are essential. But, you know, we're not essential right now. But when you make the smart aleck joke that I made before, you realize how important it is for many of us in life getting back to normal. And two big things came through in that research. One was sport is where this community comes together as a community and expresses itself as a community. So whether it's things like Big Poppy going, this is F in Boston, you know, and everybody goes nuts, mm-hmm. you know, where Boston's strong after the, you know, the marathon bombing, mm-hmm. or whether it's the 9/11 where people came back together and all our military, you know, we want you to come and sit in front rows and we want you to come and sit for free and bring your families because you're putting your lives on the line. And, you know, Osama bin Laden, you will not defeat us. We will defeat you and we'll go back to normal as quickly as we can. And, you know, that's the conclusion we came to. And you can imagine, you know, David Stern being the tough guy. And in his death, everybody realized this wonderfully compassionate gut side of him that those of us who worked closely with him saw. You balance those two amazing things together and you realize sport is where a community comes together perhaps more than anything else and more frequently than anything else and expresses itself. And I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to want to do that. The overwhelming majority will want to do that. And I think some people will be concerned, rightfully so. Then the last part of the answer to your question is then we refund them and tell them that we're going to do our darndest to make sure it's a safe environment where they feel comfortable coming back as soon as possible. And that's the scripting, you know, typically on scripting things like this, whether it's a student athlete got themselves into some kind of trouble. Mm-hmm. We have standard scripting that we share with our clients, get their full approval from their communications or sports information departments for us to be, because, you know, we're, if you think the average young man or woman working for us, Bill, is talking to at least 20, 25 unique people a day, they'll attempt close to 100 calls a day, but they'll talk to 25 a day. There's 125 people a week. So we as a company, when you multiply that out times 48 weeks and, you know, 160, 170 kids on the phone every day, you know, it's a million people uniquely each year we talk to. And so we're uniquely positioned, almost like Nielsen, to give you that kind of survey response. You know, we're pretty confident the overwhelming majority of people just can't wait to come back and watch games.
Mm-hmm. I'd like you to put on a different hat for a moment that you've worn before as CEO of the Hawks and the Thrashers in Atlanta. Go back behind that desk and tell me, if you're looking across all the functions of a team, you're looking at what your revenue picture looks like now. How do you address staffing at a time like this? Are furloughs and layoffs inevitable? And how do you view a sales staff in that environment?
Well, that's another great question. You're really nailing the heart of the toughest part of that job. And the answer to the last question is, furloughs inevitable? Yes, they are. You know, what Macy's did yesterday is going to happen. Because CEO, or in my case with the Aspire Group as founder and chairman, I have no choice. I've got to, my job more than anybody else in our company, even the CEO, Bill Fagan's job, is to look at the horizon and see what's coming and make sure we are sustainable. So, you know, I guess the best answer I could tell you is, obviously, what do we do with the Hawks, Thrashers, Phillips Arena? The parent company was called Atlanta Spirit that
right.
I ran. You know, we faced 14-month lockout in the NHL, Bill.
Right.
And it was devastating. It was absolutely devastating. And let me put it in context economically first, and then go back to the layoff or the furlough scenario or the pay cut scenario. I inherited 8,000 season tickets. So I came on board, you know, and pretty well instantly, we, you know, within a year, I believe, if my memory is correct, we had the lockout. We were supposed to have the All-Star game. And we had, when I got there, supposedly 8,000 season tickets for the Thrashers. Well, what we actually had was 4,000 season ticket holders. We had 2,000 extra season tickets where they were giving the seat next to your seat. If it was available, you could buy it for a buck a game. So it's $45 for a season ticket. So you could have the two season tickets next to your two, paying full price on two, and the next two you got for $90. And then we had 2,000 people, mainly partial plan holders, that had bought to get the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. Well, as soon as the season was locked out, no All-Star game, all those partials went away. And so we're down to 6,000. And then we, you know, we had to, because it was bad policy, cut out the 2,000, you know, $1 a game season tickets. So now we're down to 4,000. So this guru of ticket sales that came from the NBA all of a sudden has presided over 8,000 season ticket holders going down to 4,000. You can imagine what my owners thought of me. Well, it got better. You know, in that before the season of the lockout, we couldn't do any renewals. How do you renew people and get them to pay a deposit for a season you know is not going to happen? We thought we'd have some games. We didn't think we'd lose a whole season. Boom. All of a sudden you get, you know, 60% renewal the next year, because again, you're anticipating the next year you're going to play, but you go through the whole summer. We didn't get the CBA agreed till August. Mm-hmm. So you've lost two summers of renewals and you've lost two summers of new sales. We came back with 2,000 season ticket holders. So that's the financial long-term, you know, impact. Very unique circumstance. Mm-hmm. And obviously we did our damnedest to really recover. And, you know, by the time that I'd left and before they went to Winnipeg, you know, we got back to that same base number, you know, legitimately through really good long-term practices. So that's the context. So what I said to the owners, look, we need to retain our talents and we have to be fair to the execs and the staff equally. So what we did is what we had done in baseball when I was with the Pirates. Mm-hmm. And we put a plan together that was you lost 10% of your salary every month that the lockout went on. So, you know, after a month of the lockout, you dropped to 90%. The next month, you dropped to 80%, 70%, 60%, and all the way down. And, I mean, it was devastating to some people. And these were people who were 100% Thrashers based. Mm-hmm. So, you know, many of the people, like the broadcasters, you know, a wonderful man, Dan Kamal, I have to look him in the eyes. He's got a wife and kids. You know, and a kid ready to go off to college, and I've got to tell him his salary's going to drop 10% every month, and I, as a, you know, chief exec, I'm going to take the same thing, even though, you know, a third of my role is the arena and a third of my role is the Hawks, and things are coming in, because, you know, I feel it's important that I can look him in the eye and say I'm equally sacrificing, even though I've got a much bigger base salary and much more able to sacrifice. And this is what companies are facing right now. So furloughs, yes, it's going to happen. And then pay cuts to people who are in administration and headquarters and overhead, it's going to happen. And, you know, the salespeople on the phone that are making these proactive calls, no, but at some of the properties, making it very personal, at some of the properties where we are not getting compensated for, you know, our payroll approaches $1 million some months, Bill, for a small company. It's bootstrapped, 100% financed by me, although obviously I have partners in it now. It's the most difficult thing you can do. And we hope that this thing gets solved soon. And we're hoping that the government, particularly the Payroll Protection Program, the PPP, as best we can tell, we're still waiting for guidelines to come out by the end of the day today, and that those guidelines will give us an idea of, do we definitely qualify? Pretty sure we do, you know, because they're not collaterally backed. Mm-hmm. So that's good. And even if you've furloughed some people, you bring them back, you still get the credits. And that they're done through your local bank that you're already working with for your financing, line of credits, et cetera. So they have most of what they need financially and they understand and have the relationship. They can move quickly. So it's a comprehensive and complicated answer, I'm afraid. But it's, yeah, You see, if you look at the Premier League, Daniel Levy, mm-hmm. Tottenham Hotspur, is asking the players to take pay cuts. Juventus have already done it with Ronaldo. I think it's coming to American sports if this thing goes on for a long period of time. And then also in some cases, it may be ex post facto negotiation or part of the negotiation for how the NBA, you know, finishes its regular season, mm-hmm. if it does. I've heard it's on the table. I don't know anything from the inside. But do you start next year later? I mean, really, the ratings and the interest and the TV money is all Christmas Day onward. So, you know, November and December games are really tough to sell mm-hmm. in the markets like the Hawks that can't sell out. You know, do you use this as a way to make adjustments that you'd like to make anyway? Because you say, hey, look, guys, you've got to give us some breaks here. We've lost $1 billion, you know, collectively as the NBA. Is my best guess of what it's going to be, if not more. Depends on, you know, what the redo with the broadcasters is mm-hmm. going to be, and what content is shown in June or July, if in fact they do that and they run that long. Those are all the things swirling around the poor CEO's head. Steve Coonan's problem, good buddy of mine. No, not mine today, thank God.
So
I just got to worry about the almost 200 kids. And people in what we call the Aspire family for good reason.
Well, so many questions still to unpack. Bernie Mullen from the Aspire Group, thanks so much for helping us do that today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for giving us the voice. And please, you stay safe, and your family and all of our friends at SBJ family stay safe, and all of our colleagues and peers, please stay well.
All right. Well, listen, stay healthy, stay safe. Thanks so much.
Will do. You too.
Very good catching up with you, Bernie. SBJ Unpacks is now its own podcast. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify for real-time discussions about the biggest topics in sports business. You can find links in our show notes below.